Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Hello, everyone. This is Ashley Klein from Prevent Connect, and I am joined today by Sierra Olivia Thomas Williams from the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Sierra is a prevention specialist whose work focuses on priority populations. Sierra, it's so wonderful to have an opportunity to talk with you about the work you're doing. How are you today?
I'm great, Ashley. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you again.
It's so hard to believe, but it's already the end of July. And in just about a month, many prevention practitioners are going to be heading to Washington, D.C. for the 2016 National Sexual Assault Conference. And I don't know if you've had a chance to look through the prevention track, but I was looking through it this week and got really excited about all of the wonderful workshops being offered, yours, Sierra, being one of them. And I was just hoping that you would give us a little preview of what you and your colleagues are going to be presenting on.
Absolutely. People with disabilities suffer from disproportionately higher rates of sexual violence. And so we're going to be sharing about our project, which is a community mobilization strategy that targets community leaders and people with a variety of disabilities. And our focus is on increasing inclusion. So people with disabilities are at the center of all of the decision-making processes on this project for creating safe environments for all community members to enjoy. And so we really want to demonstrate how preventionists can include the most vulnerable populations and people with the power to make changes that are needed through strategic collaboration. In many ways, the most useful tool of the project we will share is the participatory social mapping process that we did with all collaborators. My main idea or my main perspective is really to kind of share and promote how using the public health approach to sexual violence prevention is a productive and dynamic change-making sexual violence prevention process.
That sounds amazing. And I will definitely be at your session. The work that you're doing is just so important and really inspiring to see that the way you have all gone about this in order to make sure that folks with developmental and intellectual disabilities are really at the center and really leading that change in your community. So I'm really, really excited to join you for that session. So I know you recently appeared as a guest on one of our Prevent Connect web conferences talking about this work and really looking at the issue of social inclusion as a prevention strategy. And one of the pieces you shared was your theory of change. So I'm hoping that you'll talk a little bit about what your theory of the problem is and where social inclusion fits in creating the change we want to see in our communities.
So we see abuse as a choice that people make within a system that is much larger than those personal choices. And so we posit that people either abuse from a position of privilege or people abuse others from a position of disadvantage. Abuse allows access to a sense of power that is structurally unavailable in that case. So these behavioral choices are supported by norms that enable those choices to continue. In addition to those norms that create our social landscape, we have the physical environment that underscores and supports either privilege or disadvantage. And social inclusion is a method that really has the potential to change the social and environmental landscape in hopes of creating safe, stable, nurturing environments and relationships. And so our third prong to this theory of change is that abuse is not an easily available option for someone to choose. And this is where social norm change comes in with the checking in and calling out. So social inclusion strategies must begin with the needs of the people who aren't included, but it also has to include people who have the power to make changes, because this is what's going to push the norms. So we have a variety of inclusion projects, and we are really bringing privilege and disadvantage together to restructure the way power is used and distributed.
I just think that, you know, the way that you explain your theory of change really shows a clear picture of how the work that you're doing works across the socio-ecological model, you know, seeking to make not only relationships between folks equitable and nonviolent, but also, like as you said, Sierra, environments and whole communities equitable and nonviolent. So thank you for breaking that down for us. Another really interesting topic that you presented on during the web conference, and that really seemed to resonate with a lot of people, was the idea that public health and feminism are complementary frameworks. Will you walk us through your theories around that?
Sure. I think that public health and feminism are complementary, but I think they're also necessary to each other. Public health is part and parcel to governing large populations, and because it wears that government hat, it can be very paternalistic and exclusive. And so this is where lessons learned from the feminist movement and feminist practices can really help. I think that feminist theory has really helped the field understand and have a strong analysis of power differentials and how those create inequality. And that analysis exposes privilege, which is key to understanding the problem of abuse. And so feminism really demands that the whole structure needs to change in order to become equal for everyone. And I think a weakness of feminism is that it needs the binary concept of gender. And this is where the pursuit of health equity, which comes through public health, can help us understand that even the category of woman is a powerful category. In the view of feminism, it's an oppressed model, but when you look at it across the different ways that people are in the world, it is a very exclusive category itself. So public health also really gives us a clear methodology for change. It's a four-step process. We determine the problem, identify risk and protective factors, assess those, and test our processes around eliminating risk and increasing protections, and then disseminating that widely. That methodology is something that has been very unclear in feminism, and so public health lends itself to seeking social justice. And so I think that public health approach helps us to problem solve in a methodical way, and it allows us to address root causes. And feminism has taught us to be diligent and vigilant and make sure that our strategies are not exclusive.
You know, public health has given us this really wonderful structure and framework, and then feminism allows us to question things. And you kind of need both of those things as you're trying to engage in social change and build a movement. It's important to have both of those. So one last question for you. For preventionists who might be listening to this podcast and who are interested in incorporating social inclusion into their prevention efforts, do you have any like concrete steps or recommendations that you would give those folks?
Yes, I do. First, we need to talk to other preventionists. The strategies that we try and that may not work, and the strategies that we try and work, people aren't going to know about those unless we share them. And so we can't do this alone. We need to share stories and get ideas from each other. My other piece of advice is get out of your comfort zone, get into the community to ask community members to help you assess what the community needs and then work together to achieve those goals. Not only will that process create inclusion and address the desire to prevent violence, but that kind of process will always have positive outcomes. In terms of concrete tools, needs assessments are an underutilized tool in our field. A lot of communities are already doing needs assessments, but it is very doubtful that violence in any manner is included in those. And so partnering with local hospitals or public health departments is really smart in terms of getting the needs of the sexual and domestic violence prevention movement met. We need to be included in those kinds of processes. And also, needs assessments let us know what the roots are to the problems in our community. I really feel like that's probably a first or second step after making those relationships. And using the tools of other fields is really important. So, for example, in our project, we use geographical information systems. And it turns out that geography is really important to looking at barriers to inclusion in the community. And so really thinking about some of the other tools, I think it was Nan Stein who created the Shifting the Boundaries curriculum, I think, for middle and high schools. And that has some of this GIS processes worked into it. They do hot and cold spot mapping. And I think that's what really inspired us to take that to a wider place and look at the community for that. And so I think the tools are out there, and those are my recommendations.
That's great. I mean, thank you so much for sharing the wisdom that you have from doing this work and working in the community so closely on social inclusion and prevention efforts. And I think those are some great recommendations and some good advice. So thank you, Sarah, for taking time out of your day to share with us. Yes, thank you. I really am looking forward to meeting you in person at NSAC. And yes. Again, just thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you for helping us do it.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission, or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CALCASA.org.